A claim has been made that Russia created fake news in order to influence the 2016 presidential election. This claim has created outrage among Democrats as well as the news media. If this claim is true and those outraged individuals want to punish the guilty, then they need to look in a mirror, because those outraged Democrats and news media members are the founders of fake news and the smear. My next guest, with her new best-selling book, indicts the names, presents the proof, and explains how their actions have been perpetrated. Along with being a New York Times best-selling author and Emmy Award-winning journalist, she's also the host of the investigative television program Full Measure. Her latest bestseller, The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. Cheryl Atkinson, thanks for being here today, Cheryl.
Thank you for having me.
And Cheryl's website, the obvious, CherylAtkinson.com, S-H-A-R-Y-L. And yes, we have a link over on our website where you can find out more about Cheryl's books, her writings, her blog, and her insights into the here and now of what's going on in politics in D.C. and elsewhere, too. The smear. What are the necessary elements for a successful smear?
Well, you know, we've gone over in the book, the playbook that has been given to me by smear artists themselves and has been written about. And, you know, they often take, as I say, a salacious grain of truth and amplify it using their tools, resources, companies, LLCs, nonprofits, and so on, to an exaggerated extent so that it dominates either the news cycle or social media or what you see online in a way that's intended to annihilate its target, often for a political or financial interest that isn't disclosed. That's how I identify or define a smear in my book.
And when we say financial, there is some big money to be made in the world of the smear, is there not?
There is, but by that I really mean that there are big corporate interests or high finance political interests that are often paying corporations behind the scenes to promulgate these smears against reporters who are reporting on things they view as damaging to their interests or on ideas and people and politicians.
And some would say, and you alluded to this too, that the victim or the target of the smear has themselves to blame because they lit the match that the smear artist poured the gasoline on. What would you say in retort to that?
Well, I think that I don't think whistleblowers and victims of unfair smears are to blame themselves, but I do say that we in the media, who are used and sometimes even smeared ourselves by these actors, are to blame because we have invited and allowed these interests in the newsroom. We've allowed them to, as I say, infiltrate our operations by not only letting them figure out how to get us to quote them and put them on TV, their trained operatives with their talking points and body language training and so on, but we've even hired them in our newsrooms as editorial presences. Maybe they're reporters, managers, people that look through scripts. So it's no surprise that when you turn on TV or read the news sometimes, it seems to be propaganda and talking points from political and corporate interests. And that's because in some instances, they are us. We haven't done a good job keeping ourselves separated.
You point out, too, among the many facts and revelations in the smear, how the so-called fact checkers are, in fact, not exactly without bias.
Yes, this is a phenomenon that some smear artists referred to, and also I found some literature on. And that is that, you know, they figured out how to peek their nose under the tent and influence virtually every image and information that you get, whether it's Wikipedia through these editing that these volunteer editors that are actually smear artists do to control pages, whether it's Snopes, which is a good fact checker of some things, but is an incorrect and biased fact checker of other things for various interests. So they figured out ways to go to the sources that people go to and influence all of those. They also use, I describe, I think in a pretty fascinating section, how government corporations and political interests use fake social media accounts, software that maintains maybe 20 accounts per person that are all fake but appear to be coming from unique IP addresses and connected to real people, to start narratives and to spread things around on the Internet, which they know is the best way, social media, to influence opinions and make people think that they're an outlier if they think something, when they may not be, but they're promoting ideas and kind of bullying and shouting down ideas that are contrary to their interests. It's all part of the smear.
Don't worry, Cheryl Atkinson, her new best-selling book, The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. CherylAtkinson.com is her website. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. certainly, and you share this too in the smear, you have come across, before you got the playbook, evidence and attempts at smear campaign, maybe the most notable through your eyes at least, was the attempt to go after George W. Bush on his National Guard story, which you write about how you looked at the initial documents and you saw, okay, how can something from 1973 be printed with a computer font when it should have been with a typewriter? What's the responsibility of the media? Because the get is always the goal. If I can get the story, then I got the payday, I got the better job, I got the corner office. Is that messing up the vision of what journalism is supposed to be right now?
Well, I don't think that's the problem. I think it's more this industry that's figured out how to manipulate us. It's always been the case that a great story, a good get, as you say, is supposed to advance journalists. That's kind of what we do. It's like making a touchdown if you're, you know, in football. That's what they pay you to do, is to get a great story. But we are too often not getting great stories. We are promulgating narratives that are placed there by interests that want this propaganda out without critically thinking and keeping ourselves separate from the interests. So we've allowed the news kind of be taken over in some respects by the interests, doing the opposite of what I think we ought to be doing, which is calling through the narratives and looking at when people are trying to plant information or are circulating it, looking at what interests are doing it and why, and what perhaps they don't want us to see and look at. And instead of going in the direction they're pointing us, I think we ought to be, and I try to, looking in the opposite direction and see what they're trying to keep us from watching. And we're just not doing a good job of that. Again, part of that is some of the people working in the industry now are these operators for political and corporate interests, or they are so in tune with their thinking that they're happy to go along with it and sort of shortcut the normal journalism routes to achieve the narratives and the goals that they personally believe in. So it's a combination of factors.
And it's important, too, I think, to make note, as you do in the smear, the smear foundation is not always these fringe rumors about what supposedly is going on at some D.C. pizzeria that maybe one or, you know, a minority might buy. It's actually legitimate, believable things that, as you say, get magnified for whatever the reason, whether it's the person who committed the foolish, stupid, you know, moment of stupidity versus, or to the point where it's just a political gotcha. But is the smear operative almost like a defense attorney? I just need to get one person in the jury to think my way, and that's going to help the fire spread that much faster.
Yes, I mean, I do think there are a couple kinds. There's wholly false information that is spread around, but I think more commonly the smear artists describe watching. They will monitor a target, literally every word and sentence that comes out of their mouth. They will opposition research them. They will stick private detectives on them. They will comb through information and look for a tiny grain of actual truth, a mistake, a slip up, or something they can exaggerate beyond normal proportions and get covered in the news to destroy the target. Well, you may say, well, how is that a smear if there's a grain of truth or there's truth to what's being said? I say that the smear is, according to the smear artists themselves, it's rooted in annihilation. It's not really somebody that found someone making a mistake that's trying to legitimately correct it. It's political and financial or corporate interests behind an effort that's organized to annihilate somebody for other reasons that aren't disclosed. And one way to get the hallmark of a smear is these same people will overlook the same behavior in their allies that they smear or attack or amplify in their enemies and targets. And that, again, is a good indicator that you're looking at a smear when they overblow something that one person says or does and yet accepted having been done by somebody else that is not a target.
One of those notable examples of that idea is Don Imus with his nappy-headed and the derogatory word after that regarding the women's Rutgers football team. But you never saw those who were outraged by that ever say something in the time Robert Byrd on, I think it was Fox News Sunday, used the term white N-word.
Well, I have a whole list in one of my chapters that talk about the offensive things and controversial and allegedly racist, I think you could say, things said by many people that were overlooked by smear operators and by the public at large because they weren't targets of an organized smear. When lesser things or equal things said by targets that they wanted to annihilate were amplified beyond normal proportions to try to destroy the target.
The smear does work. That's the unfortunate truth. It takes a large effort, and as you'll read in Cheryl's book, The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote, it is a large effort. Just under the wide umbrella that is possessed by David Brock, for example, among others, Sidney Blumenthal, who we've talked about often here on the show as well. Even when they're known, their actions still manage to stay in the dark, or at least have until now, thanks to the work that Cheryl has done with her dedication to the truth and the facts. She lays it all out in actions and deeds and history and in tactics with The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See and What You Think and How You Vote on the web at CherylAtkison.com. And Cheryl, you continue your dedication to bringing the truth to the people who have the true power, and hopefully sooner versus later the smear mongers will come to an eventual brick wall and their days will be over. So thank you for the work you're doing, for being here today.
Awareness is our best friend in all of this. And thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.